Hi, I'm Piper.
And I'm Erin.
Welcome to Off the Tracks podcast, where we explore what it means to do law differently. Today's episode is in partnership with Lawbroker, legal's first customer experience platform powered by lawyers. Lawbroker is a recommendation and matching platform that helps drive new business to solo and small practices throughout Canada. With its mission to simplify the accessibility of legal services, Lawbroker has built a platform that mimics everyday consumer applications, bringing familiarity and convenience to the legal industry. As a lawyer, you make the first move, opening up an entirely new revenue stream for your practice, all while putting you in control of your own demand.
Today, we are joined by Sandra Scheim. Sandra began her career in New York City as a litigation associate before spending 5 years as an assistant district attorney in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Currently, Sandra is the alternate chair and vice chair at the Ontario Workplace Safety and Insurance Appeals Tribunal. She is a lifelong volunteer and has consistently dedicated her time to improving the lives of women and girls throughout various initiatives, including the Women in Leadership Foundation, the Achieve Empower Program, and the Child Arrivals Support and Advocacy Program at Justice for Children and Youth. So thank you so much for joining us here today, Sandra. We are so excited to hear about your career and your experience both in the US and in Canada and all of the interesting work and volunteer work that you've done. So thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you. I'm so excited, Piper and Erin, to be part of your podcast series and excited to talk to you about my career and volunteer work. And I have really enjoyed listening to your podcast. And so I'm very excited to be part of it. Thank you for having me today.
Oh my gosh, Sandra, thank you so much. We're so excited. So Sandra, you have had like a very interesting career, and I might share later in the episode how I envision your career, because I actually think of you personally as a TV character, but I'll save that for a little bit later to tell you which TV character you remind me of. But can you tell us a little bit about how your career has evolved over time?
Sure. I actually think one of the best things I've learned over time is that you can't plan anything. So for all of those young lawyers out there and people mid-career, I would say all of your plans, put them aside, because sometimes the best things and different things happen as you go along. So what happened to me is I was in the States and I was working in New York City, and I got a job first as a litigation associate at a large New York City law firm. And I started working there, and I have to say it was great experience. I really learned. I worked with top-notch people. They were really top of their field, and I really was pushed to learn and push myself to the best of my abilities as a young lawyer. But it wasn't my dream to work at a big law firm. It wasn't my dream to work for big corporations. So I took the great quality work that I had there, and my passion really was to go work with victims of crime. And so when I moved with my husband to Boston, I applied for the district attorney's office to work as assistant district attorney in Massachusetts, and I actually got rejected. So I kept persevering. I went to a conference and I approached the current district attorney and talked to her, and eventually I became an assistant district attorney. And that was really the start of sort of a different path for me, working with crime victims and recognizing that for me, my career has really wanted to be about giving voice to people who don't have a voice in the system or who need someone to advocate for them in the system. And that was really an important part of my career, and it made me think a lot about where do I want to go next. I then moved back home to Canada for family reasons, be with my larger family. And at that time, I also was looking, and this is where I say you can never plan. I was looking for something. I realized I want something that could accommodate having a child and managing that work-life balance that we're all looking for in mid-career if we choose to have children. And so that took me to a few different places and a few different opportunities. But ultimately, I decided to work as an adjudicator, vice chair at the Workplace Safety Insurance Appeals Tribunal, where I adjudicate cases involving workers and employers, and I do some mediation. And that's also been a place where I can listen to the voices of people who are in different communities who perhaps haven't had a voice. And as the adjudicator, I can make decisions that empower people, but also that create fairness and justice within the system. So my career has taken a lot of different paths. I wouldn't have known when I started out in law school that I would have landed in those three different places. And but it's been a great career. I think the one thing I did find was, what was I passionate about? And for me, it was really passionate finding that passion of working with people and becoming a voice for people.
Thanks. You have had so many unique positions and such an interesting story. But one thing I really enjoyed hearing about is that even though you weren't successful in your first attempt at becoming an assistant district attorney, you were still able to find ways, network, research, and be able to get that position in the end. Do you have any advice for other young lawyers who have, you know, come up against pushback or haven't gotten their dream job in the first attempt? What you would say to them?
Absolutely. I currently work with a number of law students as a mentor and advocating for them. And one of the things I've said to them is I had so many rejections in my career. I think when you look from the outside at my career, it looks really like it just ran smoothly. And I would say I had so many rejections. I think I got rejected probably from about, you know, 50 or 60 law firms before I got that one job. I got rejected from the DA's office before I managed to get that job. I came up here, I interviewed for different jobs. And so I think along with that one job that occurred along the way, I had a lot of rejection. And I would just say to people that there isn't just one path. So be open and be curious about different paths and keep persevering. For example, I worked with one of my mentees. She had a vision of one path for herself and it didn't work out. So we kept working and talking and I was advocating for her, helping her network. And she's now found another path, which I think she loves and she's extremely happy working in, and that may be her new path. So I would just say, keep persevering and be open-minded, because the path that you envision may not work out, but there are a lot of other good paths that may happen along the way that you may be just as happy to build your career in.
So Sandra, you talked about mentorship in that last answer. And I know that when we've spoken previously, you've talked about the role mentorship has played throughout your career and how you have sort of re-envisioned mentorship now as you are on the mentoring side. And so I'd love if you could tell us a bit more about that, because I know when we last spoke, the way that you described mentorship to me and sort of how you've gone about redefining it was something I had never heard of before and really kind of opened my mind to a new way of viewing those types of relationships.
Oh, thank you, Piper. I really appreciate that. And I think I have spent a lot of time in the last few years as I have more seniority in the legal profession. I thought a lot about what does it mean to mentor, to sponsor. And so I've created for myself a really important goal is to not just mentor young lawyers, and that includes men and women, but I work a lot with young women, but also to sponsor them. And the difference is to put yourself out there. So I think mentorship can be something which is fabulous, where you advise, you guide, you talk to young lawyers, you give them your thoughts. But I've really turned to trying to sponsor. And for me, that's a lot about, comes from two places. One is I didn't have a sponsor in my life along my career. I really had to muddle through, figure out all of these paths myself. I didn't have senior people to talk to and discuss it with, how to get certain places. And so sponsorship to me is not just mentoring and guiding a young lawyer, but also connecting them to your networks, bringing them into the room with you, giving them a space at the table. So for example, at my work, I've tried to bring both racialized and young women to the table for projects, for meetings, for leadership opportunities, and not just saying, here's how you get to them, but actually here, come sit beside the table or take my place at the table. And outside of work, what I've done is because I'm fortunate enough to have a great network of fantastic friends, colleagues, who work in the legal community after, you know, many years being involved in the legal community. What I've done is with my mentees is to connect them to that network, to help open up opportunities, to teach them about networking and to give them access to people who are more senior in different areas of the law so that they can speak to them and access those resources if they need guidance, advice. One of my mentees is now going to work in an internship at the Department of Justice in the winter through someone I connected her with and advocated for her with. And to me, that's what my goal is with the next generation of young lawyers, particularly first generation young lawyers. My family came here as immigrants, and I really am very empathetic to people who come here and who are trying to build a new life, whether it be their parents or themselves, and create careers and paths for themselves without that background. And so that's a special place in my heart for first generation law students.
I think what you're talking about when you talk about the difference between sponsorship and mentorship, the distinction is so important. And I think in my own life, it's funny because, Sandra, when you and I met and spoke for the first time a few weeks ago, I had just kind of experienced this in my own life, but didn't have a name for it. And what's funny is I had been speaking to someone, I had a conversation with someone, and, you know, it was really nice and they gave me guidance, but I thought, like, I need to take a step forward. And this conversation hasn't really given me the tools to take a step forward. And that's okay, but I was hoping that it would have. And then I had a conversation with someone else and they said, I'm going to help you in all of these tangible ways. And it made me really emotional, for lack of a better word, because I thought, like, I'm just so grateful to anyone that takes the time, obviously, to speak with me about, like, my career or my life or whatever it might be. Everybody in life is so busy and I completely respect that. But I think that at least in my life, when I'm the one taking the call and talking to students or other people who are trying to kind of make moves in their career, my goal is to always try and help connect them. So just today, I was sending different people, some different contacts who are looking for jobs. And I said, hey, I'm actually not the right person to talk to, but you should talk to my friend who does this kind of work, and so on and so forth. And I think that distinction you're making is so important. And so when someone made a similar sponsorship type of conversation with me a few weeks ago, it really meant a lot to me, because it doesn't always take a lot to change things from mentorship to sponsorship. Sometimes all it takes is sending one email to say, hey, Sandra, meet Aaron, or so on and so forth. And I think, like, that distinction is so important. And I think that encouraging people to kind of switch that mindset from mentorship to sponsorship could really change a lot of lives, without sounding too corny. Like, you never know what one email can do. And I know from a previous guest on the podcast, that we had a guest on the podcast and, back in the fall, and, because of her being on the podcast, now two of my closest friends from law school have brand new jobs directly because of this person who was on the podcast. And I think that that, like, distinction of, like, saying, I'm here to help, I'm here to sponsor you, I'm here to quite literally lift you up, is just so crucial and so illuminating.
Yeah. And for me, sponsorship to me is something, it's almost like something I feel a responsibility to younger women to pay it forward. And because I didn't have sponsors, I feel like this is a role I can play. I can give that opportunity to someone else, whether it be, as you said, to connect someone to someone, or to give them, help them how to network, talk to them about networking, to teach them how to reach out to people. It's really interesting. I worked at, as you mentioned, I work at the Achieve organization with Empower. And when I met some of the young women, most of them are high school students. They're primarily first generation. And many of them were really shy. Some are super outgoing, but many are really shy. And a few of them reached out to me, and they were very hesitant to reach out to me to ask me about law careers. And I've gone on, actually, for a few of them, we've built a great mentor-mentee relationship. I'm still in touch with them. And I've watched a few of them really blossom as I've connected them to other people. When they see those connections and that people are open to talking to them about their careers, listening to them, I think it really changes someone's world, as you said, and how they see their opportunities ahead of them. And so for me, that really is, I feel like, an obligation to pay it forward and to do that. Just last week, I connected one of my mentees with someone who works as a professor at a paralegal program, because she's trying to figure out what role she can play in the paralegal world and what program is best for her. And that was such a small effort on my part, but for her, I think having that opportunity to speak to someone, and this was previously a young woman who was much more hesitant and shy, and now I see her really blossoming as people open up to her, talk to her, and it gives her confidence not just to pursue her dreams, but also to reach out on her own. So I think it has a ripple effect, not just me sponsoring someone, but then someone then takes that and connects to other people and reaches out and opens doors for themselves to other opportunities. And hopefully they, down the road, when they're 5 years into their profession, 10 years into the profession, they'll sponsor other young women or other first generation students coming up through the system.
Yes, that is such a beautiful sort of image in my head. I just see like this little link of, you know, you're helping and then, you know, it's going to sort of link down to the next generation. And I think that's really nice. And I think it's really important, especially in a profession like law, where I feel like a lot of knowledge is gatekept. And we've talked about this a lot on the podcast, that sometimes you just don't know things because it's just sort of just, you know, the old guard knows it and then they pass it down to their friends. And then, you know, especially younger generations and others that don't have access to that type of knowledge sort of fall through the cracks and don't benefit from that. So it's great to hear what we can do as lawyers and others in the profession to help sort of lift others up and continue building that chain. But on a completely different note, a little bit different, I guess, but you have extensive experience working in both the US and the Canadian legal systems. But can you tell us a bit about some of the main differences or maybe the similarities that you've encountered between the two legal systems?
Sure. I think for me, the Canadian system is a bit more formal. We still have a bit of that British influence in our legal system. A little more reserved, and I find a little more cautious. I found when I worked in the States, people are a little more willing to put themselves out, try new things. There's a bit more brashness, which along with that, sometimes is good, sometimes is bad, that brashness. But they sort of really push the boundaries a little more in the States. And so I think I've tried to meld those two traditions coming back here, bring a little bit of that thinking outside the box, not always just sort of going along because that's sort of the system, and to have such reverence for how things are always have been. I think the Americans don't always have that reverence for how things have been, whether it be court proceedings. They're willing to change it up a bit. So I've tried to bring some of my respect for some of the traditions that we have, which I think some of them are excellent and some of them make sense. And I think, you know, the fact that legal proceedings are somewhat formal, I do like. It shows the seriousness and the gravity of different circumstances and respect for the parties. But I also like to bring with it some of my American side, which is think a little bit, push the boundaries a bit, maybe be a bit more flexible, be willing to change things up a little bit that makes sense and work for everyone, and obviously maintain the justice and the goals of our system. And so I think that's really the distinction I would make between the two systems. But I have a slight difference because I worked in criminal law down there, and up here I've worked more in the labor field. So it may be also a reflection that criminal lawyers can be a bit more out there than labor lawyers up here. So that may also be a bit of a distinction. But for sure, I see a bit more of that pushing boundaries in the American legal system than I see up here in Canada.
Sandra, that's so interesting. I mean, Erin and I both have not worked transnationally in two different kind of systems, nor have we practiced in such diverse areas of law. Like criminal to labor is just such a jump. And I think that that's so interesting. And so I know that you did both of your degrees in the US and then you moved home to Ontario after practicing for quite a while in the States. And we'd love to hear more about what that transition was like, because I know you took like a little bit of time off, not necessarily time off, you were doing things in that time, but time off from practice. And we would just be so curious to hear about like what it was like making that transition back into practice, also in a community, like in an area where you hadn't worked before. So you really had to grow your network and market yourself.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's something that a lot of us face as women, trying to make decisions about work-life balance and family balance and the years when we have young children. So when I moved back to Canada from the United States, I took some time off. I did the bar, the national bar, and then I did the Ontario bar. And then I took some time off. I had two young children at the time and decided that in the interest of, you know, balancing family and my husband's work and my career and the family, that I would take some time off with the children. So I did take time off to be with my two children. And then when my son went to kindergarten, decided I would re-enter the workforce. And it did take a long time. It was hard to re-enter. I did find it a challenge, but I actually, my sister spent a lot of time discussing with me networking, and I really built that skill, the networking skill, during that period. I think I spent about 8 to 12 months networking and creating opportunities for myself to move into a new career and find what makes sense for me, both to balance having a family and also where do I want to rebuild my career. And I wish I could say I knew exactly what I wanted to do, but some of it is just, as I talked about earlier in the podcast, is opportunities that presented themselves for me at the time. So when I started back, I met and talked to a lot of different people and talked about different areas. Both, and I did look at the Crown office here, since that was something I was familiar with, but I also looked at other opportunities and then ended up working at the Workplace Safety and Insurance Appeals Tribunals. And I felt that was a good balance of figuring out how to manage both a law career and the balance between a law career and also being a parent at the time. And it worked out great for me, but I think it's definitely something, as women, we all face that balance. And I get a lot of questions about that from my mentees, how to find that balance. But I would say the biggest thing for me was figuring out how to network, something, a skill I never was taught in law school, never taught in university, never taught by anyone, a senior lawyer or someone who was senior to me talking about sponsorship and mentorship. So that's part of why I do, sponsor and talk to young women about networking, because I think at the end of the day, that's a big way to create opportunities or hear about opportunities or understand different options for yourself. So that was the big lesson for me in that time period, I would say.
So Sandra, part of the reason I asked is, one, because I think it's really interesting and really impacts a lot of people and isn't always discussed so openly. So I really appreciate you sharing. And two, because at the beginning, I said, you reminded me of a TV character. This is my perfect opportunity to share who you remind me of. My all-time favorite TV character, no one come for me, Alicia Florrick from The Good Wife. And it's just like my absolute favorite character. And when I saw that there was this gap in your LinkedIn, I thought, oh my gosh, that's such an Alicia Florrick badass move. And I was so excited to ask you about it. And so like, I literally just envision your life as being Alicia Florrick. First of all, like you're in the States and you're probably wearing like all these high powered suits and like you're walking through court and you're giving people like dirty looks. I mean, you're really nice, so you're probably not giving dirty looks, but this is just like what I think.
I did give a few dirty looks. I was tougher when I was a prosecutor.
So anyways, I just had to slip that in because it just reminded me of that so much. And I think that that's amazing that we have like a real life, in my mind, at least, Alicia Florrick on the podcast.
Thank you so much. I wish I had her wardrobe. Believe me, I wish I had her wardrobe. I have to say, back when I was working in the States, I had a better wardrobe than I have now. But being in New York City,
I feel like you have her hair.
So yeah, I was about to say, you're just as like beautiful. I know you guys can't see her, but she's like just as beautiful over Zoom as Alicia, and I just, yeah, you're really channeling Alicia vibes.
Thank you very much. That makes me very happy. I'll have to go and show my kids who that was so they can see.
Gosh, yeah. Oh, goodness. Well, yeah, it'll be a classic, an old classic for them now.
Thank you. I was very curious at the beginning of the podcast, so thank you. Now you've satisfied my curiosity. I'm very complimented. Thank you, Piper.
So we would love to know what your favorite or proudest memory or moment of your career has been.
I think that's a really hard question for me to answer. I think I've had a lot of smaller ones, I would say, along the way, rather than one big moment. I think being a prosecutor, I had many small moments where I felt I'd advocated for crime victims and I could see that they felt that they'd be heard in the system. And to me, those were really important moments. And being a prosecutor and allowing people to have a voice after being traumatized. So I'd say a lot of those moments were really, really important to me along the way. I think also as I've gotten more senior and being able to give people room at the table and opportunities and using my own voice have been important moments. So I wish I could say I had one fabulous moment, but I don't think I have one. I think they're just little steps along the way. The only big moment I would say is that I was the first woman in my law firm to wear pants to court. And it was a huge controversy because I was the only, we always wore skirts and we weren't allowed, they didn't have robes in the States. And it was unacceptable for women to wear pants to court. And I really hated that because it was cold and I didn't really like wearing skirts and stockings that much. And it was very radical when I wore pants to court, a pant. And of course it was a dark blue navy pantsuit. So it was hardly anything that crazy, but at the time it was very radical. And so that was like, in a way, one of my first big feminist, I'm going to push the bar a little and not just accept the status quo as a woman. And to now to young women, that probably seems so small, but at the time it was actually a big thing.
That is such an Alicia Florek move. Totally something she would do. Like, Sandra, for people listening, can you give a little context of like around when this was? Like, what year-ish was this?
Sure. So this was in New York City, and this was in the 90s. So it was a while ago, but it wasn't as far back as one would think that women were still restricted in their clothing and what was deemed appropriate for them to wear in a court setting and what was acceptable. And I was appearing in a case, and it was a big corporate litigation, and it was just it was considered quite radical. There was talk at the firm among some of the partners about that I had done that. And so it wasn't as far back as one would think, actually.
Yeah, that is definitely not as far back as you would hope to have heard that we were still alive when that happened. But a common thread, unfortunately, from our guests on the podcast is what has been deemed acceptable or presentable to wear in court or to wear to interviews or to wear to different settings in the law. So hopefully, you know, things are slowly changing, fingers crossed, but
I do think they're changing actually. And interestingly, I have a mentee who's one of the co-chairs of the Black Law Students Association at the Lincoln Alexander School of Law. And I put together a panel for the Black Law Students Association. And one of the things is I brought in someone to talk to them about hair and clothing, because this is obviously a significant issue for many racialized young people. And so I said, like, let's talk about this. Again, this is like that little bit of information that young lawyers may not have about what's acceptable. And I think it was actually a great panel and interesting conversation. And a lot of the young law students had questions about that for the speakers. But I also want to say, from this side of it, being someone who does more interviewing and seeing that, I would say it's radically changed and people are very accepting and open to different hairstyles, different clothes. And I'm really happy about that. And that's a movement that has taken place over time. And I think probably the last few years, the politicization of some of the that we're seeing is also coming into the law and helping with that along the way.
Yes, definitely. This is such a weird sidebar, but one of the courses that I took in undergrad, I almost failed, was I just thought, you know, this would be an interesting course. It was called socialization. And I think that was literally, that was it. It was just called socialization. And the prof was really, really tough. And she challenged us a lot. And she gave us like a 30%. That was like the average for the first exam, was like 30%. And we all thought we were going to fail this course. I was freaking out. It was my last semester at McGill. I thought I was going to fail out or like not be able to graduate on time, and was nervous I would never get into law school and all this sort of stuff. But one thing that sticks out from my memory of that is just the idea that we talked about how people are socialized, and we talked a lot about, you know, how the first things that they do when you're, you know, entered into an army or something like that is you get put into a uniform and you get your head shaved, and there's lots of different things that happen to sort of socialize you into that group. And just hearing a bit about how you were talking about your experience and how it used to be in the 90s and how it's starting to evolve, I hope that it's kind of changing the way that we socialize people into this profession. And I know this is very random thought that I'm having, but this is just what came to mind as I heard you talk about these different patterns and stuff. So yeah, Piper,
I feel like you have something to add. I was just going to say, like, what came to mind for me was how there are some big law firms, and I think this is amazing. I would love to see every law firm, big and small, do this. And I don't think I remember the word, of course, as I start talking about it, but it's where they do, for lack of the proper term, like blind applications. So all of the identifying things are removed from applications. So that includes name, and it also includes titles. So for example, I remember when this was first being explored when I was in law school, by some firms, they were talking about how like you wouldn't write like how you were using the example of someone that you've been sponsoring, Sandra, like president or co-founder of the Black Law Students Association at the Lincoln Alexander School of Law. You would say like president of a club at the Lincoln Alexander School of Law. And it would say the club is committed to social justice issues, to fundraising, to building community, whatever it might be. And so it wouldn't give any key identifiers about the applicant. It would just sort of go to their involvement in general. And so it would help create a more, in theory, more just adjudicating ground when looking at candidates, and take out, more importantly, like take out any hidden biases that any person reading the applications might have. And so I think that there's been so many improvements from back in the day when your firm, you caused a kerfuffle and wore pants. But I think that like, it's really, there's still so far to go. And that's both like it's in turn, like discouraging. It's like great to see like how far we've come, but like, there's also still like so much work to do. And it's a way to sort of like set a fire within all of us to continue to do the work and lift others up who might be in a position like you were maybe back in the 90s, who they're doing the equivalent now of wearing pants.
Right. And I think there's so much opportunity now. And I think that a lot of the legal world is really open and receptive to this. And I think they are looking at all these issues. And I'm finding most of the legal communities that I work in are pretty really trying hard and working hard to be open-minded and thinking about different approaches to DEI issues, accessibility issues, access to justice issues. So I feel really inspired by what's going on in the legal community. And I find the young lawyers that I work with and young students that I work with really inspiring. And one of the reasons I think I've continued to mentor and work with young lawyers is I find them really inspiring, what they bring to the table and their different experiences and their lived experiences. And I find that it's been always for me, you know, learning and being curious and opening my mind. And so I get as much out of it as they may get out of some of the sponsorship or mentorship that I do with them. But I get as much out of it by learning and hearing about their experiences as they move along in their careers here or their high school or university educations.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all of this wisdom with us and for sitting down and chatting. And one thing that we always like to learn from others is what they've learned recently. And so we would love to hear what you have learned recently.
I think just what I touched on before, I think I've learned so much. I work, I'm really inspired. My daughter is a university, just graduated university, and I gotten to know quite well her cohort. And then I work with young law students. And I just say what I've learned is just to always be curious, to always listen to. And I find I learn so much. I find the next generation of women are bringing so much to the table. And I think always staying curious and learning for me. So I think for me, being exposed to different communities, different parts of the legal community, different communities in Ontario, different communities in law, but also different people from different backgrounds is my goal, to always keep learning. So I don't know if there's one specific thing I would say that I've learned lately, but I feel like I'm always learning, and that I'm learning by always being curious and asking questions and opening my mind. I work at the Women in Leadership Foundation with people from a really diverse group of backgrounds, and I feel like I'm always learning from them about their holidays. I talked with a good friend from there recently about Ramadan and some of her traditions, and so that's something I've learned. So I think if you're open, you can always be learning about different things and different legal issues, different religious, different people learn things from people who are racialized. So I think just always being curious to me, and then you always are open to learning.
Sandra, thank you so, so much for spending time with us today and for sharing more about your experiences. It has just been such a treat for us, and we cannot wait to learn about all of the stories and maybe have some of them on the podcast one day of all of the people that you've lifted up along the way throughout your career. Because when like one of us succeeds and like one of us is given an opportunity, like it spreads and it creates so many new opportunities and so many wonderful successes for others. And I just think that that's such a wonderful thing that you're doing. So for anyone looking to learn more about Sandra and the initiatives that she's a part of, you can find all of those details linked in the episode notes. And to stay up to date with the podcast, you can follow us on Instagram at Off the Tracks Podcast, and stay tuned for our next episode coming next Tuesday.
Thank you so much, Piper and Aaron, for having me. I've really enjoyed this hour. It's gone by so quickly.
Thank you so much, Sandra.
Thank you again to our partner, Lawbroker, Legal's first customer experience platform powered by lawyers. To learn more, visit lawbroker.com and see how you can join the movement to become a modern lawyer.